Hello, Open Heart Project. It is great to see you. We're both extremely happy to see you. I look forward to sitting together. We're going to sit together for 10 minutes, and we're going to start soon. But before we get settled, I want to just remind you that as of January 2020, the weekly meditation videos have become monthly meditation videos. And that was a hard decision to make, but after sending out free meditation videos once a week for 7 years, I had to reflect on how my life has changed since I started doing that, and how the Open Heart Project has grown since that time. Who knew? And what, you know, I could focus on that would bring the most benefit. So I had to make some changes. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. New monthly meditation videos will come to you on the first Monday of every month. And if you want to keep getting weekly meditation videos and study more together and connect with guest teachers and so on, please think about joining the Open Heart Project Sangha. There's information in here somewhere about how to do that. But I don't want to spend too much time talking about that and make this all salesy. Instead, I want to talk about love. So February, at least for many parts of the Western world, is when the dreaded Valentine's Day happens. And Valentine's Day has turned into a pretty silly holiday, if I may say. It doesn't seem to be about love anymore. It seems to be about selling things. This is the world we live in. And either feeling bad because you don't have a relationship, or you're relationship is not good, or your heart is broken, and so you were like not happy to see all these reminders of love, or you feel bad because you choose to celebrate Valentine's Day with your beloved. And anyways, just speaking from personal experience, the more attention I paid to Valentine's Day to try to make it special, the worse it's turned out. It's sort of a recipe for disaster. Anyway, setting all the romantic illusions aside, I think it's a great month to consider love and celebrate love. And in the Buddhist view, there aren't a million teachings about love and relationships, because perhaps most of the great teachers were not married, or relationships were simply different in the 2,500 years of Buddhist history. The whole notion of relationships has evolved. And this is what made me want to write my last book, The Four Noble Truths of Love, Buddhist Wisdom for Modern Relationships. So in this month of love, well, every month should be a month of love, I thought it might be useful and fun to just review, what are these Four Noble Truths of Love? The entire Buddhist path is based around something called the Four Noble Truths. These are the first four teachings that the Buddha gave upon attaining enlightenment. And I'll tell you what they are very briefly. And at some point in my own relationship life, I've been married now for 21 years. How'd that happen? We were in a very bad patch. Like, very bad. Not for no reason. It's just we couldn't get along. Whatever one person did, it upset the other person, hurt their feelings, or just made them feel angry or sad. And we couldn't figure out why. There's nothing wrong. We just couldn't get along. And it lasted for months. And one day I was sitting at my desk crying, because I was thinking, well, maybe this is over. I thought we loved each other, but everything ends and maybe it's over. I don't know where to begin fixing this. And my very next thought was, begin at the beginning. At the beginning are Four Noble Truths, the core teachings of Buddhism. And I was like, oh, wow, hey, that's, thank you, thoughts. That's an awesome idea. Wait, what does that even mean? How do you do that? How do you apply the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism, which are life is unsatisfying because everything changes, grasping creates that lack of satisfaction, trying to make things permanent creates the unhappiness, not the impermanence itself. It's possible to stop suffering, and there's a way to do it. also called the Eightfold Path. The fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path. So, okay, well, how can this help me in my love life? So the first noble truth of love, as I imagine it and take it all with a grain of salt, the Buddha did not say any of these things. These are my own interpretation. The first noble truth of love is that relationships never, ever stabilize. No one told me that. I thought, oh, I'll find someone, I'll love them, they'll love me, we'll have problems, we'll work them through, and then at some point, that never happens. Or let's say it happens for a moment, or a day, or a week. And then it changes, because everything changes. So relationships never stabilize was a very interesting insight to me. Oh, this is how it is. Some days we're going to love each other. Some days we're not. Some days you're going to love me. I'm not going to be that interested in you, vice versa. And it's going to just keep going like this. My first response was, ugh. My next response was, okay, put me in, coach. Let's do this. I can do this. In part because, for me, I am a meditator. That was part of my reasoning of thinking, oh, I can do this because I know how to ride certain waves. However, my husband also is really good at this, and he's not a meditator. So it's not like you have to meditate in order to do this, although I find it extremely helpful. Relationships never stabilize. They're uncomfortable. Second noble truth, thinking they should be stable creates the instability, at least in part. Thinking they should be comfortable makes them uncomfortable. Well, relationships should be this, they should be that. This problem means we're doomed, or it means that we're not right for each other. And you know what? You may be doomed, and you may not be right for each other. That's what makes it particularly confusing. But problems themselves are not an indication that the relationship is bad. I'll just say that again. Problems are not an indication that this is a bad relationship. Unless, caveat, please listen to me, I'm not kidding here, the problems involve things like abuse or addiction, because these are things that no one can control. And a different kind of help is required. So I just don't want anyone to think, well, a Buddhist lady told me that, you know, relationships never stabilize. So the situation I have with abuse and addiction, I should somehow, you know, make that work. If you can, great. But I just want to accept those conditions, exempt those conditions. And if you struggle with those things, my heart goes out to you. The third noble truth is that it's possible to stop this. It's possible to meet the discomfort together. Rather than always trying to manipulate the discomfort out of existence, which if you can do it, great, you can look together at the discomfort and be in it together. That's a brave thing to do. That's not an easy thing to do. But what I find is it takes you out of the, it's your fault, no, it's your fault. Okay, yeah, look, examine, take responsibility, hold people responsible, for sure. But don't stop there in your relationships. Instead, it's possible, perhaps, to look together at where you are on the arc of this crazy ride and acknowledge, it feels good, it feels bad, I don't like it, now I do. Be in it. Be in the relationship together. And then the fourth noble truth of love is there's a way to work with it all. And I defined three steps. The first step is about honesty and thoughtfulness, because if you don't have honesty and thoughtfulness, you can't have a relationship. You can have something else. You can have a love affair. But it's hard to have a relationship if you can't be honest and you can't think of the other person, or they can't think of you. The next step, and I'm kind of rushing through this because I want to get to the meditation and I don't want to take your whole day, but it's all explained in the Four Noble Truths of Love. So the second step is this super radical step. And it is to acknowledge that the person you're in a relationship with, wait for it, is equally important to yourself in the relationship. I'm kind of making light of it, but I got to say, when I was like, wait a minute, you're here, there's someone else here? I remember a moment where I was like, oh no, it's not just me. This relationship isn't about me. That was weirdly shocking. Go figure. But if you can acknowledge the other person as having equal importance to yourself, it shifts things quite powerfully. And then the final step is to view everything that happens between you, setting aside abuse and addiction, as a means to deepen, not love, because love comes and goes, but intimacy. Everything that happens between you, except abuse and addiction, can help you deepen how well you know each other, how much you show of yourself, how open you can be to the other person. Those things are called intimacy. Love ends, comes back, it goes away. Intimacy has no end. You can commit to that for a lifetime. I found that enormously heartening. I like to be very responsible in my commitments. I like to think things through because I don't want to be an idiot. But when I realized I can't commit to love because I'm not going to lie and say I can, but I can commit to intimacy. I felt very empowered in my own relationships. That I can do. I'm not saying I can be great at it, but I can vow. I can commit to that where I can't, to love. So those are, in very brief, the Four Noble Truths of Love. Why am I taught wise a meditation teacher talking about that? I can explain it to you in two sentences. Sentences said not by myself, but by the Zen teacher and poet John Tarrant Roshi, who said, attention is the most basic form of love. Through it, we bless and are blessed. Those are very profound sentences. They indicate that in order to love, we must know how to pay attention. Otherwise, we're having some conversation with ourselves. But when I can take my attention and place it on you, that, John Tarrant Roshi is saying, that is love. And we can all feel when someone's talking to us or purporting to love us, but their attention is actually not on us. It's on themselves or on the future, or it doesn't feel good. But when someone's attention is on you, it's like water in the desert. In meditation, of course, we practice with our attention. We place it on the breath, and when it strays, we bring it back. If this is your first time meditating, this talk is much longer than normal, forgive me, but I'm going to explain exactly how to do that in a moment. Place attention on breath. When it strays, we come back. Every time we come back, it's like doing a curl at the gym. We're strengthening the muscle of attention, which, by this definition, is also strengthening the muscle of love. The capacity to love. Thank you for listening. Begin your practice, please, by landing right here. You can look around. Oh, I'm here. Be here. Give your weight to the cushion or chair. If you're seated on a cushion, your legs are crossed loosely in front of you. Or if you're seated in a chair, please sit with your feet flat on the floor. In either case, land. Be in your body. Not trying to get anywhere. Rather, trying to be here. Here is where the action is. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Sit up straight, so the back is strong and the front body is soft. Let your belly relax.
let your shoulders soften. Soften the area around your heart. See if you can detect your own warmth, the warmth that surrounds your heart. The chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long and the mouth is closed. But the lips and teeth are slightly parted. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, meaning you already know how to breathe. Just keep doing that. And the eyes remain open. And the gaze is cast down to a spot in front, up to 6 feet or 2 meters-ish. And just let your gaze rest. Then let the eyes soften. And the crown of the head reaches up a little bit. Now feel your body breathing. Feel the inhale. Feel the exhale. Attention rests on the wave of breath, and the breath can carry you in and out. But we're not observing the breath, we're feeling it. Very simple. Your mind will continue to make thoughts, which is fine. That's what it does. No problem there, none. Most of your thoughts will just come and go on their own. You don't have to do anything about them. However, if you notice at some point that your mind has become absorbed in thought, like completely, like you have lost awareness of your breath, fantastic. Because you just woke up and saw where you were. You're thinking, cool. When you notice that, just notice that you're thinking. You can label that moment silently to yourself, thinking. That's thinking. Then let go. Just let go. It doesn't matter what the content of the thought is. Gently come back to feeling the breath and take a fresh start. And the amount of fresh starts you are allocated in any given meditation session is infinite. Infinite. So you can relax. And we'll sit together. Let's close our practice by arousing the aspiration that this practice can benefit all beings in their wish to love more deeply. And I arouse that aspiration for you. Thank you so much for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together.